This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
This episode comes from my archives. For the most current episodes, please go to germwarfare.com. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas. Mark MacDonald, thank you for joining me in the Christmas trenches.
Happy holidays and merry festival.
What's the other one? May this festive season bring you good tidings.
May the season... I can't even remember. It's just so convoluted. I hear it all the time on radio shows. I can't even keep this crap into my head because it's I find it just so nauseating and offensive. I reflexively just say Merry Christmas as I walk around, and I've been doing it in LA for a few years now, where you'll go to a store and someone will check you out, let's say at a grocery store or a pharmacy, and the clerk will say "Happy Holidays" yes. as you're leaving, and I always look them in the face, and I stare them in the eyes, and I say "Merry Christmas." And it's interesting because about maybe 40% of the time, I get this sudden lift in eye gaze and spirit and a smile, and I hear "Oh, Merry Christmas" right back, like a very human, warm kind of reaction, which is really gratifying. And then about 60% of the time, I get this like moderately confused and slightly offended look, like that person doesn't understand what I'm saying or is disgusted by it. And those are the two responses that I get to Merry Christmas in Los Angeles.
I think that's everywhere in the West. But I mean, Mark, why do you think people hate the phrase Merry Christmas?
Because it connotates joy. I believe that anything that brings joy is under attack in the Western world today. And there's no exception to that, except those activities that bring pleasure. And I'm differentiating pleasure from joy. For example, prostitution, alcohol, marijuana, as he sips on his whiskey. Those things bring pleasure, and that is highly supported in the West. Anything that's hedonistic is highly supported, especially if it's hedonistic in a narcissistic way, which most hedonism is. In other words, if it brings pleasure to you, it's supported. Because anything that brings pleasure to someone also generally removes any kind of critical thinking or awareness of problems or even an expression of that horrible, maligned quality of toxic masculinity, courage, strength, anything like that. Something that brings pleasure is exalted. But if it brings joy, which is a different emotion, that's a sense of elevation, of happiness, of wanting to generally be with others and connect with other people in a unique and highly individual way, that is attack everywhere in the West. And I can't really think of any exception. And Christmas really brings joy. It doesn't bring pleasure. It actually brings a lot of work, you know, shopping and putting up lights and the tree, having to go to family gatherings with people you may not really want to associate with. Christmas is actually a lot of work. And it can be, to some degree, a bit sad because it reminds you of regret, what you didn't accomplish over the past year. People that you've lost, perhaps periods of time earlier in your life where things were not great. Or maybe it's not great now. Maybe now you're alone. Maybe you just got divorced. Maybe you just lost a child. Maybe you're poor because you haven't been able to work for the last 9 months. Or you've been deprived of an income, except that from the government. So you're basically a slave to the state. Whatever it is, you may not be in a joyous mood. But Christmas brings joy out.
Mm.
And when people are joyous, when people are celebrating, when people are communing with one another, when they're focusing on their families and their communities, not just on their narcissistic pleasuring needs, that infuriates a large segment of our society, the segment of the society that wants to grow government, to remove and delegitimize religion, to destroy families, to ensure that people are dependent on pleasure-producing paths, like the alcohol, like the marijuana, like the prostitution, the gambling, etc. So I think that's one of the main reasons, if you want to get away from the anti-religious aspect of it and just remove religion entirely from it, Christmas brings joy, and that's why it's under attack.
Okay, before we go any further, I'm getting some horrible sounds coming from your mic. Don't you just want to move around your... It's not your boa. It's your actual microphone that's making some noises. Just test it for me quickly.
Let me unplug it and plug it in and see if that fixes the problem.
Okay.
Sometimes the connection is just...
That sounds better. Yeah.
Great. Okay.
Okay, so the case for Christmas. Why should we be making it?
Well, this is a bigger question, but it's a really important one. And I think that a lot of people who are not religious don't believe that there's any reason to keep Christmas. The only people that are really fighting for Christmas are people who are religious Christians and also religious Jews, which is interesting. There's a very strong support for Christmas by religious Jews, which I think undermines the argument that you often hear that Christmas is oppressive, that Christmas is an imposition, that those who don't believe in Christ or who don't define themselves as Christians should not be forced to suffer this indignity of the Christmas season. That's all complete BS. It's actually a lie, because one of the strongest groups that supports Christmas, at least in the United States, are Jews. And Jews are not Christians. They don't believe in Christ as God. So why would Jews want to make the case for Christmas? They have no reason to. They already have a religion. They're totally filled up. Their cup is overflowing with religion, especially the Orthodox Jews. And yet they're very supportive of it. The answer to the question, of course, is that Jews support Christmas because Christmas overlaps with their own values, which is that people should have a good religion to follow, and people should express joy, and they should bring happiness to others. They should focus on what's important, not just in terms of material possessions, but in terms of family, relationships, and ultimately God. So they support it tremendously because they're not secular people. Now, what about those who aren't religious at all? Why should they support Christmas? I think there's a very good reason. Now, I could argue that in the United States, one of the reasons is that Christmas isn't only a religious holiday. In this country where I live, Christmas is a national holiday. It is actually a coming together of Americans, not of religious people. And the government has conferred its status formally as making it a national holiday for that very reason. So if you don't celebrate Christmas, then I could challenge you and say, well, are you not an American? Do you not celebrate Thanksgiving? And forget the whole, you know, Columbus colonization, raping indigenous people, BS. I can go down a whole list of holidays, 4th of July, Thanksgiving, well, we've got Columbus Day, which I sort of already mentioned, through the extension of Thanksgiving. Halloween, although it's not a federal holiday, it's still one that's widely celebrated. More or less, Americans celebrate these holidays. Now, there's been a lot of pushback recently about 4th of July, and you know, we're not even supporting America, so we oppose 4th of July, which is, in a way, kind of the same reason why they oppose Christmas. They oppose it because it brings joy, but also because it's an American holiday. So anything that is American, they're opposed to.
6th of January, also one to celebrate?
Well, I certainly celebrate that. I go downtown to LA and I riot and I break into stores. And I do it in blackface and I hold up a sign. I'm planning my goal, my dream, my New Year's resolution for 2023 is to be the white face of black supremacy.
I don't even have a one liner for that.
we had a local radio host run for governor last year named Larry Elder, who's 100% black.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping, and this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
And he was called the black face of white supremacy. So I want to do the inverse. I want to be the white face of black supremacy. I really think that Christmas, because it's not just a religious holiday, is so important. It's so critical. It's an American holiday. And I think it's harder to make that case perhaps in Western Europe, but certainly in the United States, it is truly a patriotic holiday. And putting out lights, for example, which is an expression of joy, and it requires work. You're not just sitting at home drinking yourself to death. You're outdoors, on the roof, on a ladder, putting up lights, risking your physical health and safety. Why? To bring yourself joy? No, you can't even see the lights from inside your own house. You can see your Christmas tree lights. You can't see your house lights. So why do you do it? You do it because it brings joy to your neighbors. It brings joy to people who pass by. It brings joy to the people who drive their cars around on their way back from work, living 40 miles away, because when they drive home after dark at 5 p.m., they're so happy.
Yes.
That's why you do it.
Yes.
And so few people are putting out Christmas lights today, Jeremy. When I grew up, everybody did it. If you didn't do it, you were shunned in the community.
Yeah.
Now if you do it, people look at you and think, what the hell's wrong with this guy? He's putting out Christmas lights? He's destroying the environment by wasting electricity to bring joy to people. How dare he? This is literally where we've come.
Now, I know, as well as you know, that Christmas is somewhat separate from Christianity. It's got pagan roots. Everybody knows that these days, right? I mean, this year, this got nothing to do with Jesus Christ. But as you've pointed out, you're smiling. It brings a sense of fun. Now, in your mind, Mark, is it possible to have the two together?
Well, of course it is. Who argues against Halloween by saying it has pagan roots?
Hold on.
Nobody.
Your cable again.
Microphone too, so God knows what's going on.
Yeah. So back to my question about, can you have Christmas and Christianity together?
Well, think about Halloween. Halloween has pagan roots, and nobody argues against Halloween for that reason. I think this is kind of a non sequitur straw man argument. In fact, there are actually many groups in the United States that practice pagan rituals. Wiccans are celebrated. In fact, satanic clubs in the U.S. are now being sponsored by public schools. You want to join the Church of Satan after school? Absolutely. We can't discriminate based on viewpoint. That would be wrong. But you have this little small, this minority coterie of people who attack Christmas saying, well, it's not really religious. It's actually a pagan rite, so therefore we have to cancel it. I don't think they really give a crap about whether it's got pagan roots at all, the hats and the Santa Claus and the trees. They just don't want it to bring joy to people. I think that's the actual reason. If you look at the fruit that comes from the tree, I think that's the best way to judge an activity, a person, a religion. And the religion of Christmas and the practice of Christmas, even in the non-religious sense, such as putting out lights, such as offering people gifts, it brings joy. Does not receiving a gift bring joy to a person? Of course it does. And for this reason, I think it should be continued. And anyone who argues against Christmas has to argue against bringing joy. There is no compulsory obligation to practice or celebrate Christmas. No one is forcing anyone to go to church. No one is forcing anyone to provide gifts. No one is even forcing anyone to say Merry Christmas. If you want to pull away from it, you certainly can. But I think that refusing to acknowledge that the participation in this religious or non-religious aspect of this holiday is actually an act of pulling away from the celebration of yourself, of goodness, of giving, of gratitude. So it's just like in Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is ultimately a celebration of gratitude. And when you refuse to participate in Thanksgiving, I think you're an ingrate. So I think the same thing applies for Christmas. I don't believe that you need to be religious to celebrate it. Just as I said, the Jews celebrate Christmas often, maybe not in terms of the rites, R-I-T-E-S, but they certainly celebrate trees and lights and festivals and food, and they are not religious Christians by definition. So I think that as long as you want to express something positive, something good, something that brings you and your family together in a moment of joy and gratitude and celebration, you should be, not have to, but you should be celebrating Christmas.
I remember some years ago, I dated a Jehovah's Witness, and it was a fantastic experience because they obviously don't celebrate Christmas, but they also don't celebrate birthdays because birthdays are not biblical. But I can guarantee you, is it Holden? Is it birthdays? Yes, it's birthdays that they don't celebrate. I might have this wrong, but let's assume I'm correct because I think I am correct. Now, the interesting thing there is that they say, okay, if we're going to be consistent, then we need to be consistent. But I can guarantee you that a lot of Christians who oppose Christmas celebrate birthdays. I'm just going to also just quickly Google this while you respond.
Of course they do. And I can tell you why those who don't celebrate Christmas, not the Jehovah's Witnesses, but people you're describing who celebrate birthdays and nothing else, why they do out of narcissism, because it brings them joy. Or I should say it brings them pleasure. And I'm not against celebrating birthdays because it's narcissistic. I think that's fine. You only do it once a year, or as some people do in the U.S., they have their birthday month, so they celebrate it for 30 consecutive days. That's a little excessive. I think that's a bit overly narcissistic.
Yes, I am correct.
You're right. They do celebrate birthdays.
Jehovah's Witnesses don't celebrate birthdays.
So my response to that is, I think that's stupid. I really do.
Well, there we go. There we go. And that's the answer.
Just because you're consistent doesn't mean you're any less stupid. I generally do believe in consistency. But if you're being consistently stupid, you're still stupid. It doesn't make you any less stupid. I don't really see the point in refusing to celebrate something good because it doesn't have religious roots. I think there's a lot of reasons one can celebrate. For example, one can celebrate the birth of a child. That's certainly not a religious holiday. Mm. And why not? You're bringing a new life into the world. That is not a pleasurable, it's probably terribly non-pleasurable. Can you imagine the discomfort of the woman who just had a baby? Or the husband who's stressed and anxious? There's no pleasure in having a child, but there's joy. And so celebrating the birth of a child is a joyous event. Now, we're not celebrating that as a society anymore. In fact, there are movements now called the antinatalist movements that actually oppose birth, believe it or not. They oppose babies. They oppose pregnancy. They oppose fertility. They want the population to die out. This is their stated mission statement. I mean, this is not even in a debate. They truly believe this. Why? Well, they would say that it's because the planet is being overpopulated, we don't have enough resources, which is factually absolutely false. That can be disproven very easily and quickly. My belief, why they don't want to celebrate birth, why they're antinatalists, is that they actually don't want families to have joy in their lives. That's what I think. So I don't believe Jehovah's Witnesses are anti-joy. I just think that they're foolish in this area because I don't really see any reason to oppose celebrating non-religious holidays. I don't really see any point in Puritanism or in Ludditism or in the destruction of all education after the fifth grade, which is what the Amish do in the East Coast in the U.S. I think that that's actually foolish, and I think it actually impairs the human ability to rise above his humanity and achieve something close to the divine, which we can never truly achieve. And the vocal activist secular left, and I'm not saying the Jehovah's Witnesses are in this camp, but I think there's a kind of a silliness that's overlaps with this other group. I think that they actually want to oppress humanity. And ultimately, I think the end game is actually an anti-human movement. Christmas is such a pro-human movement, which is ironic because it's founded on the divine, it's founded on worshiping religion, but it's actually very pro-human. It's actually saying that there's value to humanity. The idea, of course, behind Christmas is that Jesus died on the cross for people, for humans, which means people are important. they're so important that the Son of God died for people. So why would you not want to celebrate the value and importance of your species? It's such a nonsensical, irrational, and ultimately...
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sail for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Self-defeating proposition that I just don't see any defense for it.
Yeah.
The case for Christmas is there's no defense against not celebrating it.
While I'm busy asking you my next question, perhaps you can adjust that cable that really hates you. It's one of those days, Mark. It's one
is
of those
still
days.
Still acting up?
Every few minutes.
I can actually swap it out if we need to.
Yeah, you're welcome to swap it out. If you have a secondary one that you want to use, you are welcome to plug it in.
I do. This is the brand new Apple microphone, and
it might be the port.
Behaving, so
well, it might be the port. Yeah. I'll wait.
But
just to make everything smoother.
Okay, let me get a different one.
Okay.
Okay, let me grab the second one, and then we'll see what happens.
So have a look at the comments here. Man, my throat. Yo. Got lots. You're back.
See if this one is any better. I got a secondary one that's also made by Apple, but is from last year's model.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, at least they're not these cordless things.
I stopped using those about a year ago after I was excoriated by Dr. Joseph Mercola during an interview who said I was frying my brain. He was so angry with me.
I was going to ask you, Mark, you know, don't you get irritated with ultra cynicism? I love...
Yes.
Christmas. I love Christmas because it's the one time of the year when my family comes together, my friends come together. There is so much happiness and silly stuff. It's the one time of the year you can play Boney M without feeling guilty. You know?
There is a reason why anything that's joyous is attacked, because people who are happy, people who are not pleasure seeking, again, because I want to make that distinction very clear, but who are happy, like as Dennis Prager often says, happiness is, I'm trying to remember the exact quote of the book, happiness is a moral obligation or happiness is a personal responsibility, something like that. And I love that line because I think just like as he says, keeping yourself from stinking, you know, your BO, your bad breath, imposing that on other people, we don't allow that. We say that guy smells bad, his breath stinks. We don't just smile and say, yeah, sounds really good, smells really great. No, we don't like those people. People who are just consistently ultra cynically unhappy, they reek of cynicism, and they stink up the environment, the interpersonal environment that they're in. And that's why I think there is an obligation for people to be happy. And so anything that helps support happiness, anything you can do to support happiness, is a virtue. So it's not just because you're religious or that you want to have fun or that you're silly that you support Christmas. You support Christmas because it's your human and social responsibility to support Christmas and to be happy and to bring happiness around you and other people. That makes you a good person.
Although I did notice you conveniently didn't comment on the fact that I brought up Boney M.
But you brought up what?
Boney M. Come on.
What's have you Boney not heard M? Of,
have you never heard of Boney M?
No.
Mark.
What's that?
It's like if Bing
Boney
Crosby.
M?
Yes. Look it up. If Bing Crosby is to Christmas, then so is Boney M. It's like they are the definitive Christmas music. I can't believe you haven't heard of Boney M. And you live in LA.
Is this some esoteric South African pop
No.
band? What is this?
No, Boney M. They're massive. Well, they don't exist anymore, but hold on. No, wait. You can't. No wonder you didn't comment. I cannot believe it. Okay, hold on. I've got to play something. I'm going to have to cut this out because all the podcast, I'll get flagged for copyright infringements. But I'm going to have to play you something. I cannot believe you haven't heard of Boney M. No wonder you didn't comment.
Okay,
hold on. There we go.
About.
The very first thing on Apple Music, I type in Boney M and the top result is Christmas with Boney M. Okay, wait. There we go. You have to have heard of... Okay, here we go. Oh, no. The connection is not authorized. What the hell does that
it's
even mean?
Working.
Hold on. Yeah, hold on. I'm going to have to chop all of this out of the final podcast because we're going to get so many copyright infringements now. But hold on. What the hell? Okay, let's do this. Okay, let me try this again. Here we go. Wait. Have you never heard them?
I've heard this song, but I don't believe it was sung by a Bolivian mountain pop band. I thought it was from...
Jesus Christ was born on Christmas Day, and man will live.
They're very cheesy.
Because of Christmas Day.
I can't believe you never heard of Boney M. Okay.
I've never heard the second song ever, and I've heard a different version of the first song that sounds like it's sung by a group of chihuahuas from Michoacán. I think it's a Mexican band. But Boney M, I have no clue who Boney M is.
I wonder if they are one of those exports, those American exports that just never made it in America but are big everywhere else.
Yes.
I
think that's the case.
I'm trying to think now of that guy who did there was another singer who existed for like 30 or 40 years in the US, and he was massive worldwide but nowhere in the US. Rodriguez. Yeah, you've
never
not heard,
heard
of him.
There's a guy named was it Yanni? There's a guy that had this soprano saxophone who had really long hair like Fabio and white cotton sort of robe linen type clothing, and he had this song called Songbird. Kenny G. And he made millions of dollars off of Songbird.
With a saxophone.
But nobody listened to it in the United States. Yeah, it was a soprano sax, and he would walk around like this. It was awful. It was complete horseshit. But he made hundreds of millions in a few years off of this song. But I don't think anyone in the U.S. actually listened to it. So maybe he and Rodrigo know one another.
Your cable really is gone crazy again. I'm going to have to ask you to move it around. Otherwise, we're going to have no podcast.
Oh, no.
I don't know what it is. It might be your port. By the way, can I say port? Sherry is the term also.
I had a lot of port, but no sherry when I was in Lisbon last month. And it's very inexpensive and quite good. They even serve it on the plane, and they force it on you. They walk around with a big bottle on Tap Portugal. They didn't have any menus because they had given those away to the next flight. They walked off with them, apparently, the staff did. And they were unpacking the trays in the business class seats with the plastic on top of the box like you used to get in coach in the 1970s. It was really low end. I would never recommend this airline to anyone. For many reasons. But what they did do is they walked around two-fisting the port bottles. The stewardess would actually carry one in each hand, and she would just walk by and pour glasses to try to pacify all of the angry passengers who weren't getting menus or food. And I started to grow to really like that. I have a very positive experience now of port.
Okay, so let's get to the very important case for Christmas question, and that is, what is a Christmas movie?
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast. to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation with Chevy Chase.
That is a Christmas movie. But okay, no, but my question is more, how do you define it? Is it a movie that comes out at Christmas or has Christmas in it?
So we used to have Christmas movies in the U.S. every year. I don't think we've had them now for like 3 or 4 years. I think that's partly because the desire to kill joy overcame the desire to line one's pockets in the studios in Hollywood. The only movies that they come out with now in the United States are angry, depressing, destructive, anti-human movies sprinkled with a little potpourri, soupçon, amuse-bouche layering of superhero rehash and sequel. So we don't really get those movies anymore. You have to go back in time and actually watch them from earlier in a time period when most Americans were aligned in a kind of middle class economic value suburban life. See, my view of a Christmas movie, and I'm thinking about it from the Americans' point of view, because I don't think any other country makes Christmas movies except the U.S. It doesn't really exist. It's a cult American cultural phenomenon. I think the American Christmas movie is defined by a fairly lighthearted, unifying-themed, family-oriented, with perhaps a little bit of debauchery if it goes to the sort of adult level, like the National Lampoon level. Not to the level of actual porn, but just sort of right underneath, sort of blurring the lines. Like the scene where Chevy Chase goes into the mall and he goes to the perfume counter and he starts stumbling over his words because he's got this really hot young girl who's flirting with him, and she offers him a perfume because he's buying it for his wife, and he's staring at her breasts and her nipples are just sticking straight out from her tight shirt, and he says, "Wow, it's a little nipply, and I mean nippy." And he starts blowing, and she's just smiling at him, and his wife walks up and she's like, "Oh, hi, Clark. What are you up to?" And he's like, "Oh, nothing at all." He runs away. See, that's a Christmas movie. But it's a bit risque. So it doesn't have to be pure. It doesn't have to be religiously inspired. It doesn't have to even be Dickinsonian in offering really upstanding learning and moral virtue. But it has to be unifying. It has to be contemporaneously unifying, which means we have to ultimately have something good come out of all of the foibles. You get lost on your vacation, the house burns down, the dog escapes, but at the end, everybody comes back together. It has to be in winter, it can't be in summer, so it's seasonal, certainly. And you come back together and you celebrate what's important. It's kind of like a modernized version of A Christmas Carol with a little bit of trash thrown in. That's a Christmas movie. And I don't think we have them anymore, because I don't think that in the United States we agree as Americans that those experiences, those values, those lessons, and that outcome where people come back together, not as cynics, not as depressives, not as angry, destructive loners, but back as a unit. I don't think that we value that anymore. And that's why I don't think that Christmas movies are being made today in the United States.
It's very sad. I mean, Christmas movies are notoriously cheesy and terrible for the most part, but they bring joy. Now, every year this time, my wife and I watch Christmas movies, and almost always the same ones. I don't have a choice in the matter. I'm married. You wouldn't know. But
I watch whatever I want.
Well, if I play my cards right. But but my wife and I always fight over this particular Christmas movie. I don't think Die Hard is a Christmas movie, but she believes it is, and I'm completely outnumbered. Is it a Christmas movie in your mind?
That's a tough one. There's actually been a debate in the U.S. about that just this past year, and there were op-eds written in newspapers, believe it or not, about Die Hard, and there were opposing views, both sides. There was no consensus. I think that there are elements of a Christmas movie in Die Hard because there is a, first of all, a Christmas seasonal theme. This is during Christmas, so you already have the setting. That's fine. There's a challenge or a threat to the unity of the family through the hostage taking, which is, this is where it becomes a little non-Christmassy, is the incredible violence and superhero courage aspect of the film, which is not a Christmas theme. But at the end of the movie, there is a reunification. And as it's going on throughout the movie, there's a tone of lightheartedness and comedy. So you see there's some aspects of it that are very Christmassy. There's some satire, there's some humor, there's a challenge over Christmas that brings people back together. But the non-Christmas aspects are equally strong. There's definitely a superhero, but sort of a heroic quality in the movie, an expression of courage, a man alone fighting against an evil group of terrorists and vanquishing them with force, with violence. That's not really Christmassy. I'm not opposed to that. I think that's great for a movie about masculinity and about courage. That's fantastic. But I don't think that Christmas is about that. I think Christmas is about, you know, as you and I both are familiar with Jack Donovan's work on The Way of Men, a book that's made a huge influence on you, and I've been reading it myself recently and thinking a lot about the themes in the book. There's two aspects that he focuses on in the book. One is, and you make the distinction yourself often, the aspect of being a man, which is what Bruce Willis is in that movie, and being a good man. And I think that Christmas is about being a good man. In and of the aspect of the role of men in the Christmas movie. And there's always a man in a Christmas movie. You can't have a Christmas movie with a bunch of chicks. That's not a Christmas movie. That's a chick flick. There has to be a man. And there's usually, I can't think of an exception to this, there's almost always a woman. There's basically a family in a Christmas movie. So it's a family-driven core theme. So if there's a family-driven core theme, there has to be a man who is being a good man in the movie. And I think Bruce Willis and Die Hard is kind of confusing because there is a man who's being a good man, but largely speaking, he's also being a man, meaning he's expressing courage and strength and honor and competency. And I don't think that that's really the core essence of a Christmas movie. So that's why I think that it confuses people. I don't think that you can call it an anti-Christmas movie, but I think that there's a lot of overlap between, you could even call Die Hard, I would say, it's a melange of a Christmas movie and an action flick. And that's why I think it's sort of defies genre.
Okay, while I am chatting to you again, you'll have to just adjust. I wonder if it's your boa that's causing the interference. I've got no idea, but I'll just cut all this out. Don't worry.
I can hold it away from it.
No, it's still. It's. Right, I think
hold it away from it. So maybe
it's every time you unplug and replug it in, then it works. Yeah, I'm not
sure.
See
if that helps.
Yeah, it's fine now, but after a few minutes, it always starts going crackly, and I don't know what it is. But it's fine now.
That's
again.
Odd.
It is odd, and it must be your port because you've changed your your cable. Anyway, we'll carry on, and I'll.
It could be. Maybe it needs to be cleaned out.
It's not a problem. I'll just chop it out of the final edit, and you won't notice it really. In the real one. I mean, what the hell? We're riffing. But Mark, we watched A Nightmare Before Christmas, and funnily enough, that is definitely a Christmas movie, although it's dark.
Well, it's gothic.
Mm.
And there's a difference between dark in the way that we usually think of dark and gothic. I think it's a bit complicated psychologically, but those who support goth and gothic, like say Batman and medieval period, well, not medieval, it's pre-medieval period, those who dress with the black clothes and the white face paint, there is a kind of worshiping of darkness, but with an underlying sense of virtue. I think that movie does, in the same way that Halloween is dark, and yet Halloween is also pretty fun. There's an element of exaggerating and putting on a pedestal that which is grotesque as a way to attest to something very life-giving. It's a bit of a contradiction, but I think it's different than, say, satanic worship, where the goal is actually anti-human, anti-life. It's the imposition of depression and pain and loss and isolation. I don't think of gothic and dark as that. And you can also be, and this movie is a good example of it, similar to the way that Mexico celebrates the Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. They don't do that in a depressing or sad way. I mean, there is some prayer that's done for those who have passed on. So there's a bit of a funereal quality to it. But it's not really the worship of death. It's almost like standing up to death and loss and facing it and mocking it as a living person. So I think you can still call The Nightmare Before Christmas a Christmas movie, even though it's not on its surface warm and fuzzy.
I've got a fairly loose definition, though, of Christmas movie. For example, for me, Lord of the Rings is a Christmas movie, but only because it came out at Christmas, if you remember. It has no Christmas theme in it. So I've kind of got that PCR test vibe. Like, you know, it's more or less in that region. So I'm going to go with it. It's Christmas positive.
I completely reject that. I think that's absurd. I don't accept that at all. I mean, if herpes came out at Christmas, you would call it a Christmas VD. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
That sounds good. That. We'll go with that. there was that. Well, a couple of Batmans, as you pointed out, are Christmas themed as well. But they got that gothic vibe. But every single year, without fail, there are pretty much three movies that my wife and I will always watch. That is Love Actually. Funny enough, you mentioned the US, but that's British. The other one is that one with Arnold Schwarzenegger when he's chasing.
But it's an American movie.
What? Love Actually?
It's an American film, but it has British actors.
Oh, I didn't know that. And then there's that Arnold Schwarzenegger one where he's looking for that toy. What's it called? Yes, it's Jingle All the Way. And he is absolutely terrible in it.
Yes, I remember that movie.
And we watch that one, and we always watch, I can't believe I'm saying this out loud, but we always watch Home Alone.
Well, that's a quintessential Christmas movie.
Can you believe that he's in his 40s now?
I know, I've seen pictures of him now, and I just think, whatever happened to this? I can only imagine, and in my head, just the picture of the boy face with his hands like this going there, like that, which was the advertisement on the billboards. But that was a really long time ago.
He was also in that Michael Jackson music video, I think. Was it? Wait, what, it was him, hey? In black or white? Or was it another kid? I don't know. They all look the same. Those little blonde
heads. As a child?
Yes.
Was it like a copy of Baby Spank Me One More Time?
I'm sure it was a Michael Jackson music video with Macaulay Culkin in it. I'm very certain. But you don't seem to know what's going on in your own country.
It's very disturbing, given his predilection for touching small children. Did Michael Jackson die?
You know, Michael Jackson had a raw deal, right? It wasn't his fault that he was born a black man and died a white woman. don't be mean. By the way, I think your cable needs adjusting again. I want to go back to something that I was talking about earlier, and it's the meaning of Christmas. I like we said, we agreed on the idea that it's this merging of Christianity and paganism, and there are reasons that you can certainly make for it, right? You can make the case for Christmas as you have been doing, because ultimately there's a sense of happiness, joy, celebration, family, all that sort of thing. When I was growing up, I always would watch with my family on Christmas Day in the morning. We'd watch the story of Jesus and his birth, because my mom always said, we must remember actually what we are doing today, what this is all about. We can have fun later, but for now, we're going to just have a moment for the next couple hours. And I loved that. I know that Jesus wasn't born on December the 25th. We all know that. But whenever he was born, I don't see people celebrating on that day. So I'll go with December the 25th.
Well, I think that clearly the best way to celebrate Christmas is to acknowledge its religious roots, because from that springs everything. If you're not actually religious, or you are not Christian, then certainly you shouldn't be forced to celebrate the religious aspects of Christmas. But I don't really see any harm in acknowledging it, and in certainly telling the story, even if you don't happen to hold that religious view, because everything that comes, all the good that comes from Christmas, comes from that root. So if you're only celebrating, say, presents and exchanging gifts, I mean, that's still not a bad thing. Giving and receiving, being generous and expressing gratitude for having somebody provide you with something freely is a good thing. It's a virtuous quality. But I think that severing ties from that original idea of Christmas does dilute or diminish the power and the effectiveness of Christmas. And obviously at the extreme end of things, where Christmas is nothing but a commercialized holiday of buying and selling stuff, then you really have such a dilution that it almost becomes a somewhat meaningless exercise. I mean, what's the difference between that and just having a birthday with everybody at the same time? You know, the point is not your birthday, it's, you know, Christ. So I would like to see more people celebrating Christmas, or at least acknowledging that that history in the way that your mother did when you were growing up with you and with your family. I would like to see more of that in the U.S. and in the West. I see only good things coming of that. And the only argument, Jeremy, the only argument against any of this, what you just described with your mother about gift giving, about celebrating, about putting lights out, the only argument is really one that's grounded in narcissism. I cannot think of a good, virtuous argument that is truly free from spite and hatred and envy and narcissistic exaltation, the self being more important than the community. I can't think of any argument that doesn't fall into that camp that is an anti-Christmas one. They're all that way. So if you, just stepping back and look at this objectively, whether you're pro or anti-religious, it's irrelevant. If you just step back and be honest with yourself and look at this objectively, can you make any compelling case that's not grounded on something dark and dirty and nasty, any compelling case to oppose the spread and frequency and depth of celebration investment in Christmas? I challenge anyone to make that case, because anytime you make that argument, it's going to be one that's narcissistic and envious and destructive.
I suppose the argument would be, well, it's pagan. That's it. That's the one that you would get. It's a pagan festival.
But even the religious people don't use that argument, which is why it's so easy to dispel that from true motivation. I think that's a false argument. I think the argument underneath it is still grounded in envy. I mean, if Christians and Jews and even some other religious groups that believe in Christmas, even though they may not celebrate that in a religious sense, if even they don't use that argument, then how can you propose that? And in fact, the people who are the most likely to propose that argument are the ones that are the most in favor of Halloween. In fact, I was discussing this just yesterday with someone, and I said, well, what's the prevalence of putting out Christmas lights, which is a good sort of surrogate marker for whether the people in the home are celebrating Christmas? I mean, other than just going and knocking on doors and having an interview, I think that's a good visual, countable marker for the depth of celebration of Christmas. Are there lights and how many lights? I think that's a great one. And what I heard back often was, well, certainly the light number is declining. That's true. But interestingly, someone else said towards the end of this conversation, the diminishment of lights in neighborhoods that are not supportive of Christmas seems to also correlate with the degree to which those residents are celebrating Halloween by putting out incredible displays of Halloween ornaments, ghosts, sound boxes, fake smoke, sheets hanging from the trees, pumpkins, lights, come and get your candy. Those people that would be the first people to say, well, we don't believe in celebrating Christmas. It's a pagan holiday and we don't believe in. They're the ones that are celebrating Halloween. So I don't think that's a sincere argument. I think that's a distraction. And I don't think anybody really cares about that.
And you'll have to just do your cable story again. I have no idea. I have no idea why we're having a Murphy's Law Day, but it is what it is. We've done many shows, and it's just one of those. It's one of those days. It goes
never
with
had
the,
this problem.
It's fine. It goes with Christmas. You were talking about lights, and you know what's interesting? I know that lights around the house are very much a U.S. tradition at Christmas, and there's some of it in the Commonwealth, you know, or former Commonwealth regions like South Africa. And every year we drive around, we know there are certain suburbs where there are those streets that have amazing displays of lights on the houses, and people park their cars and you walk down the streets. And you know, Mark, It's just beautiful. It's fun. Everybody's got a drink in their hand and there's laughter. And for just a few nights of the year, everything else doesn't matter.
We have that here in Los Angeles. There's a neighborhood right next to Palos Verdes where I used to live. I didn't live in Palos Verdes, but I lived at the base of Palos Verdes. And it has three streets. It's just a residential neighborhood. It's not a huge wealthy area like Beverly Hills. It's just a middle-class neighborhood with lots of families, lots of kids. It's kind of the core family neighborhood left in Los Angeles that's not just a bunch of rich people. And that little three-street area is filled with millions of lights. It's so lit up, and it's so famous and popular that there are police that man entrances to the connecting streets with wands, and they wave people in a certain entrance direction, and then there's an egress direction just to keep the traffic flowing. And people park from about a half a mile away, and they walk in, and they look at the lights on foot. And the neighbors, they sell drinks. They sell hot drinks, alcohol and non-alcoholic drinks, on the street for like $1, $2 to people who are walking around. They also sell food. These are neighbors, not professional food trucks, just people with their kids putting out little kits to sell food and drink to people. I don't know of any other place in Los Angeles that does this to this degree. And I cannot think of any reason to oppose this that has validity. People, they're trying. They're trying to shut it down. Oh, you're using too much power. You're blocking the streets. There isn't enough room for emergency response vehicles to go. There's always some argument, but it keeps going. It's persistent. Because there's enough people that see the value in this and that find this to be such an island of pure joy in a 365-day year of mediocrity and an absence of actual joy. Erratic, inconsistent pleasure, sure, but there's no persistent joy in Los Angeles. There hasn't been for years. So I think this oasis of joy is being protected by not just the neighbors, but by largely the population, because there's something that is so appealing on a basic level that even the Scrooges who want to shut it down cannot succeed. They can't get any traction. So I think there's something almost, I'd say, universal in what you're describing, where you are and where I am, that appeals to the average good person.
Yeah. I have to add a caveat, though. I talk about the street lights or the lights on the houses when there is electricity, because we currently have around 8 hours per day of rolling blackouts. So if you drive down a dark street, you know, well, let's come back in 2 hours' time. Unless they've got generators.
South Africa. The country where it's too hot half the year to even go outside because of all the sunlight. How's that solar power energy source working for you? You've got rolling blackouts in a country that is bathing in sunlight.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? And I mean, right now as I talk to you, I don't have electricity. I'm running off an inverter. but you know what, you take the good with the bad. It is what it is, and you learn to listen. When you eventually come and visit, we'll talk about that another day, but when you eventually come and visit, I'm sure you'll experience it.
I've had some of the best times in countries that have had real structural problems, because to a certain degree, there's a kind of a a rallying around the structural problem that pulls people together. There are always breakdowns in society. The question is just, where is the breakdown? And I would, and to some degree, I would rather have, say, an electrical power breakdown be the problem in a society than the breakdown be one of a complete failure of the moral compass, of the denigration of virtue, of the destruction, outright attack on masculinity, of the anti-human movement and all of the effects that it has, which is what the United States is largely suffering from. I mean, we don't have power issues right now. We will probably have them very, very soon, because that group wants us to go without power. It's actually intentional. And then we'll have both problems. So we'll have the worst of both worlds, and there'll be nothing left but the weather to celebrate and worship out here in Los Angeles and California. But if you can choose, if you had a choice, I would pick something like your problem versus the problems we're having here. I would pick the problem, as I described quite often in the last few weeks, of corruption and graft in Croatia over the problems that we're having here in LA. We're taxed at around 70% now in California. If you look at all of the local, county, state, federal, individual, corporate, sales, gasoline, electrical taxes, if you add all of them up, it's around 70%. I'm paying 70% of my money to get shit here in Los Angeles. Roads that don't work, we get internet failures all the time, crime is out of control, you can't buy anything in the stores, 40% inflation. I'd rather pay 20% of my income to a corrupt judge, to a corrupt policeman, to a corrupt bar owner, and have a great relationship and get my permits, get my tickets expunged, and get my beer and my liquor, and not have to deal with all the shit. I would much rather do that. So there is no nirvana here on Earth. It's only a question of which problem you want to have. And I think that some problems are actually better than others.
I think that part of the Christmas case is that what you just described gets forgotten for just a few days, or maybe a week or two. And it's the most amazing thing. It's almost as though there's a societal pressure to be decent people, right? Your neighbors suddenly become a lot more friendly. I don't know what it is. Is it because people go and leave, and this it's a tradition that happens every year, and you know it's coming, so you put in extra effort to be a better person just for that short period of time.
This may be one of the reasons why Barbara Farrar, the fake doctor and city public county health official who's been torturing us here in Los Angeles County for the last 3 years with lockdowns, shutdowns, mask mandates, vaccine passports, all this bullshit, that may be one of the reasons why she has not been able to successfully reimpose a universal mask mandate right before Christmas. She said she was going to do it last week. She actually announced it, and it's just disappeared. And it may be because there's a respite that we've entered into, a period of respite, where people, even the crazy people who are still running around with these stupid diapers on their faces, even they don't want to be put in the position of yelling at people to put on a face diaper when they walk down the street or go into a store. That there's something so revolting about chasing people down and being nasty and mean to them at Christmas. But even these sadistic, self-appointed citizen police don't want to support this. And so there's been a kind of pulling back in the last week of a lot of the nasty stuff that we've been living with in LA. It would be nice if Christmas were to persist for longer. Maybe we could have like 6 months of Christmas so that we'd actually have 6 months of good behavior and people being nice to one another. One of the biggest casualties that I've seen in the last few years in my city and I would say in the United States at large, is just people being nice and friendly to one another, to be good-spirited, you know, forgetting all the politics and the debates and the arguments, just friendly, warm, sociable people. They all just disappeared, and they've been gone for about 3 years. And now, just for this brief period of time, they've all come back. And I would invite them to stay and hang out here for a longer period of time so that they can see that life is better when they're in this frame of mind.
You do know, though, Mark, that no conversation about Christmas is complete without the very real problem of depression that always, always comes up.
Well, you can't have anything that is truly based on celebration and gratitude and joy and happiness without the acknowledgement that there is loss, there is suffering. I mean, think about Christmas itself. The kind of juxtaposition of Christmas and Easter. You know, Easter is all about light and celebration and positivity, the birth, rebirth of Jesus, and yet, you know, Christmas is always attached to the death of Jesus as well, and the suffering and the loss and the turning against him by the people at his time, the sacrifice. I think that there is a necessary ruminative and reflective aspect of Christmas that makes that holiday different than just, say, a celebration of your own birthday. There's something that is inherently anti-narcissistic about Christmas, whereas birthdays are somewhat, in a healthy way, somewhat narcissistic. They're about you, right? They're not about other people. They're not about the happiness of the community. It's about your happiness. And I think that makes it more powerful. I think that it forces people to a certain extent to reevaluate themselves, to look at themselves a bit critically in the context of support, of love, of joy, of giving, of gratitude. And that diminishment of the narcissism, I think, is what makes people better people at Christmas. And it may even, to some degree, catapult them into the new year on the footing of wanting to be better people. Because they've gained, hopefully, some sense of perspective. They haven't just been drinking and eating and being hedonistic. They've actually done some work. They've put out some lights. They've purchased some gifts and give them to other people. Perhaps they've worked in a soup kitchen. There's a push at Christmas more than any other time of the year, at least in the U.S., for Americans to look at those who have lost something, who are unhappy, who are poor, and to reach out and to help them. Very much like the Christmas Carol. The Christmas Carol story, it does have some sadness. It is somewhat depressing. But there's a quality of rejuvenation, of rising above the sadness and the inherent tragedy of humanity, of being human, of life, that makes it that much more special. I mean, in a simple way, you could say that life would never be precious if there wasn't death. The only reason why we value life is that it has an ending. And I think Christmas is sort of like that.
Also, there's that problem of people who are lonely at Christmas, and there are lots of those.
Yes. And I see that in my practice, which is why I tell people at Christmas more than any other time, you need to seek out others. Christmas is not a holiday to be celebrated alone. It has to be celebrated with others. And some people don't have a family. Some people don't have people to celebrate with. They need to be around other people. If you are not, then your sadness, your depression, your losses are only going to be magnified, and your experience of them, and they will not be put into the proper perspective. And this is why, sadly, suicide rates go up around Christmas. People who don't have the skills or the connections to help cope with their depression and their losses, they feel very isolated. So it's really critical for people at this time to find others and to commune with them. Sadly, I think that Christmas has provoked a greater degree of sadness and depression recently than it did a long time ago, because I think that the human and communal aspects of Christmas have been largely replaced with the commercialized aspects of Christmas. And I think we've kind of lost the roots of what the holiday was. I don't think Christmas was inherently nearly as destructively depressing for certain people a generation ago. I think now that the depression can be actually destructive. Clinical depression is always destructive, but sadness is not necessarily a destructive force. Sadness can actually force you to look inside, force you to think, to meditate, to reflect. Depression is clinically is always destructive. So if you're able to go somewhere where there actually is a Christmas community, a smaller town, another city, a place that isn't like New York or LA or Seattle, where everybody is secular, they all hate Christmas and they're all hiding out on their own, then I think you can actually benefit from it. But I would agree that it's harder now to do that in large urban areas in the West than it used to be, and that's probably why depression and suicide have gone up.
Okay, I think let's bring the reindeer in for a landing. Don't you just love that metaphor?
Did you just make that up?
I did, and I was saying that because I quickly want you to change your plug again as we do the final lap. We have had a whale of a time with this connection. I think it's the first time we've had such a difficult connection for a bunch of reasons. The audio has been very all over the place, and have you noticed that there is a delay in our communication?
There is. I think it's the new platform you're using, because I've never had that problem before.
It's not a new platform, it's the same. But I think it's to do with our rolling blackouts.
Oh. You think they're what's the word? Not ratcheting. There's a verb that they use to titrate the flow of electricity and data.
I've got no idea. It might be my inverter also. Who knows? But listen, we've been able to get through the brunt of it. So in closing, Mark, the case for Christmas in your mind is a solid one.
I think the case for Christmas is irrefutable, and it is solid, and it's one that comes from the non-religious premise that Christmas brings joy to people, and we need more joy in our lives, because happiness is a serious subject and it's a moral responsibility, if not a moral imperative. And whether you're religious or not, it's a holiday that extends in its influence beyond just the religious worship, which of course is central to Christmas and can't be divorced from it. But it is a universal holiday. It is, in this country, United States, an American holiday. And it's the only holiday that I know of that is both civic and religious at the same time. And that's why it's critical to maintain it, both for religious and for civic reasons.
And obviously, we need to fight for Santa Claus and not Santa Claus with the bugs.
Santa Claus is probably the bribe with which children are brought into the Christmas fold, because without it, there isn't really much reason for children to be involved in Christmas, at least not on a selfish level. But you can bribe them, certainly, in joining in, and then from there they get attached to the holiday and they start to perpetuate the Christmas giving, which is for them, you know, Christmas receiving when they first start out. And it's also, you know, it's like the Easter Bunny. It's a, like a lovely thing to bring children into, because it brings joy to children. There's nothing wrong with training your children to anticipate something that's joyous and that brings people together. We've lost that. We've replaced that with the idea that one needs to be protected from pain and failure. And I don't think that that's the purpose of raising parents, of parents raising children. I think that one of the qualities and experiences you need to give to your children is the expectation of something joyous. And that makes a huge difference in the lives of children, as we can all remember when we were growing up how joyous and how important and exciting Christmas was. And to take that away from the next generation of children, I think is just cruel.
Funnily enough, your Freudian slip there about raising parents is probably relevant if you look at today's woke culture.
That is so true. We're often asked, and I often discuss this subject on your show and others, where have all the men gone? Where are the men? Mm. Well, you can ask the same thing about parents. You know, where are the parents? Where have the parents gone? In order to have a non-Lord of the Flies society, you need to have parents. Society can't be run by the children. And we don't have a lot of parents left anymore. We have a lot of adults who don't want to behave like parents and who want to outsource their responsibilities to others, particularly the state. And I think that's a huge problem too. So reinstating the importance of the parent-child relationship is also a critical aspect of Christmas. Christmas is about families. Christmas is not just about children. It's not a child holiday. It's not like a birthday party. It's also not just an adult celebration. It's not a January 1st New Year's party, which that's always an adult celebration. It's both. It's the dichotomy between the adult and the child. The adult knows something that the child doesn't about Christmas, and yet the adult can use his influence as the parent to bring more joy out of the event for the child. And also, I think a critical part of this is also through surrogacy, re-experience the joy of Christmas through the child. And that's not something that you can do in any other at any other time. Do we experience the surrogacy of a birthday through our child's birthday party? No, we just get the cake and hope that they have a good time. But there's something about Christmas for a parent that if he participates in it, he relives the experience and the joy of Christmas through his child's eyes. I think that's also a very important aspect of the family part of Christmas and why Christmas movies always have families in them.
Yeah.
Because I think that just like cartoons, adults can re-experience the joy of a cartoon seeing it through a different perspective 30 or 40 years later. I think Christmas is the same thing.
I feel like you've been missing all my metaphors today, though. When I made the Santa Claus joke, I was referencing Klaus Schwab.
I didn't hear the Klaus. I thought you were trying to use a German accent.
Well, I mean, that's fairly close. And we put Santa Claus on the train and we send him to the camp.
Schneller, Fräulein.
Because he really wants to ruin Christmas, doesn't he? I mean, imagine if Klaus Schwab, imagine if he had his way, right? So Santa would fly around the world, not giving toys because the kids can't own the toys. They'd have to rent them because they'd have to own nothing, remember? And they must be happy.
You know what, you could actually, this is a good metaphor that's coming to my mind that doesn't require intellectual energy and philosophizing in order to explain to people. You could symbolize metaphorically the entire internationalist anti-human movement as a Grinch.
Mm.
there is something in its essence about that movement and all of its aspects that is found in the Grinch.
Yeah.
And everybody knows what a Grinch is. You don't have to use philosophical terms to describe it. We just know intrinsically what it is. What is the Grinch trying to accomplish? And that is what Klaus Schwab and all these others are trying to do. It is something intrinsically anti-joy. And there is almost like the forces of Christmas and anti-Christmas, of Santa and the Grinch. And there's a battling going on. And it's not just at Christmas, but it's all year long. And I think that the forces of Santa Claus and not Charles Klaus Schwab need to prevail, because I think the Grinch is emblematic of something that we need to fight against. And I think, you know, Klaus Schwab is certainly somebody that needs to be fought against. And rather than arguing philosophical points, I need to see them in that way, and then I think we actually can bring Christmas back.
Okay. At this time of the year, is there a reason for me to follow you? And if there is, how can I do that?
There's no reason to follow me at all. Just
cheers.
I am still, God knows why I'm still doing this. Maybe because I just want people to be happier in the long run. I am still writing every week on my Substack, Dissident MD, which can also be found on my website by the same name, Dissident MD. And I am, in addition to encouraging people to read that Substack, which discusses all the themes we talked about today and more, I'm also encouraging those who have not yet completed their Christmas shopping to purchase and gift a copy of my recent book, United States of Fear. That's the first one, sorry. Freedom from Fear, which is the second one, which is a more uplifting theme, to those who perhaps haven't yet found their way to celebrate and bring joy in their lives at Christmas, because they're still attached to anxiety and to fear. And that is the antithesis of Christmas. Christmas is about losing fear and losing anxiety and being joyous and expressing fun and bringing that to all the generations above and below you. And I think that the Freedom from Fear 12-step guide can help you accomplish that. So it's a very, you could call it like the Die Hard of Christmas films. Freedom from Fear is the Die Hard of Christmas books. And you can purchase it through my website, Dissident MD.
Mark McDonald, thank you for joining me in the Christmas trenches.
Feliz Navidad.
Don't go anywhere. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of Christmas ideas.